okay, Rudy. It's a beautiful day outside. Just want to ask you a few questions about this interesting book
that is
right in front of me here called Open Eyes, Jackson Ryder by Rudy Lopez. And I've come here with like a fresh perspective, you know, just to hear your take on this five-year journey that you've been on.
Mm.
And now you come to the time where you've actually concluded and put it all into this little beautiful book here.
Well, I'll tell you a little bit about where it came from so that you have an idea of its genesis, because I'd written another book before. It took me 10 years to write that one, and once that was done, I had several books that I started, got 20,000 words into them, and then realized there wasn't enough there to actually get them going further. So I sat down and I thought, well, what do I really know? What is it that I can actually write about that's interesting to me? And because I have been doing art for 45 years now, and taught it. I knew that if I could do something with that, there was a story that I could tell, and I thought that was going to be what I would write about.
I'm sort of interested in the presence and importance of the art in this book. And how is it your work, or work in this artist, informed in this book?
Well, because it is about art, everything that I know about the process of making art, as well as about artworks themselves and analysis of art, really informed the work. And I wanted to share that with the reader. That was the thing that was really important to me, was that they would understand that, because whenever I've read books before about artists, it always seems to me like it's writers writing about artists instead of artists from a real artist point of view. They tend to romanticize too much what being an artist is like. I mean, you know, because you're an artist, that you do the work and that's what you do and that's really what it's about. And all the rest of it is what people put around that process that you're doing all the time.
Can you tell me a little bit more about your work as an artist and what your preferred medium is and why?
Oil painting is always the thing that I always go back to. I can do acrylic painting, I can do sculpture, I can do printmaking, not as good as you, but I can throw a few things out there. But I always go back to oil painting, and I think it's just the visceral experience of, you know, putting that paint in the smell and waiting for it to dry and pushing it around on the canvas. I just love it. It's just great.
So we're saying this book is not like a theory, but it's actually a practical way of actually solving some problems. And, you know, like when you're sort of like having an artist moment and like waiting for God to give you the idea or to move on an idea, will this book give me this sort of inspiration or way to solve a problem or like solutions?
It isn't really designed to do that, because really at the basis of it is trying to tell a story, and the art is kind of something that you pick up along the way, so that the reader who has no art background and they don't really know what goes on, they will learn some things, they'll pick up a few things, you know, color theory and whatever, or analysis of a piece of art. But it's not really the reason for the book, and it's not what I wanted to be the main theme of the book.
But it's just more like your experience as an artist, like practicing in the studio, your ritual and actually approaching your painting.
Yeah.
This is what I'm getting, what you're saying.
There is a scene in there like that, because the boy is 15 years old, and when his teacher realizes that he has some ability and he wants to push him further, he dumps some paints on them and he says, here, go mess around with these things.
I know that one. Yes, that's like having colored crayons
in
a blank page.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And so he has to go through this process of trying to figure it out. And the teacher says to him, you know, I'll show you this, you need to do this, and you need to be aware of these things, but just go and play. And so he goes through that process. And so the reader gets a chance to experience that as a first experience too, you know, which is something that many of them will never do in reality.
Fantastic. Do you have a favorite artist?
When I think about a favorite artist, I don't really think of one particular artist, because it depends on which day it is or what aspect of art you're thinking about, or whether it was last year or, you know, this morning. And sometimes you'll just look at a piece, you know, and you just go, oh my God, you get an insight into art that you didn't get before because of this. And then that becomes my favorite artist at the time. But there have been several people that I've been influenced by, and Francis Bacon was one of them.
Yes.
A great Irish painter. Richard Diamondcorn, I don't know if you know his work or not, California painter from back in the 70s, 80s. Egon Schiele, love his line, beautiful stuff. Imad Tillers, the Australian artist. Michelangelo, always go back to Michelangelo. Mm-hmm. Philip Claremont is one of my favorites. Sylvia Sadell, Peter Robinson, Wellesley Binding in Hawke's Bay, a good friend. The Mexican muralist, Seraphine Pick, Bill Hammond, Keith Haring, Joaquin Sorolla, Winslow Homer, Pete Mondrian, Matthew Cooper, the list goes on and on and on. The people specifically in the book that I mentioned that are inspirations to Jackson that are the same for me. Edward Hopper is someone that I really enjoy, and Alfred Pinkham Ryder, who's no relation to the main character. Robert Motherwell, Mark Rothko, and George Tooker, who also has the same kind of psychological intensity that Edward Hopper shows in his work.
You know, that sort of relates to some of the questions that I've asked you at the beginning, and you've answered them, and then coming back to all the different mediums that you're dealing with. So it's sort of all the artists. I mean, personally myself, and listening to you, what you're saying is like pretty much I go through the same experience, what you're doing as an artist. It's like not drawing just, yes, it could be the painter tomorrow, or it could be the sculptor today.
That's right.
Or it could be a performance artist, or it could be just something as simple as something like this book. So it's all those little things, yeah, just getting from what you're, that's covering all the different genres. And I sort of have to agree with you, like, there is no one genre. There's so many different genres to have their art experience. There's a number of scenes from this book that take place while Jackson is at school.
Right.
He's a pretty good student, although he does get into a bit of trouble. Were you like that at school?
No, I wasn't. I was keen to be a good student. I really wanted to be, you know, someone who excelled at academically. But the thing is that I'm dyslexic. I realize now, back in those days, there was no name for it, so I didn't know that that was the case. And all my friends were intelligent. They were all, you know, doing really, really well. But I was like down in the middle of the class somewhere. And so I kept trying. But mostly what I was doing was I just, you know, hung around in the art room and did art, did music in the music department, did dancing. I did all kinds of things that I was able to express myself in where I didn't need to do anything academically. It's only when I got a computer that had a spell check that I actually I really thought about, writing is another, it's another medium that I can use, and I can actually control this, and I can actually do something with it.
But wouldn't you say, being dyslexia, that you're just wired differently, aren't you?
Yeah.
And your art really is just your first language.
That's right.
So it's an alternative language. They're not going to have this experience of, like, reading this book. You know, I'm dyslexic, okay, and I'm sort of, I've come to terms that I've actually been rewired.
Yeah.
Just see things differently. Is this book going to sort of have a, like, do you jump into symptoms of during the book about this dyslexia?
Actually, I don't mention dyslexia too much, although the character Jackson does get distracted in other classes, even ones that he's interested in.
Yeah.
But you can tell that when he is doing artwork, he is really there and he's really doing something. Like I say, I didn't know about dyslexia until I was just about to graduate with my first degree, with my painting degree, because that's when the research was being done, and people were saying then, it isn't that you're stupid, which is what I thought I was.
No.
It's that you are wired different. That 40% of artists are dyslexic. That's a statistical fact.
It's a gift.
It is.
You just see things from a different perspective.
Exactly.
That's all it is.
And it's wonderful, too, that, that art students now don't have to feel the way that, we would have felt in our day when it was seen as being something that was a
disadvantage.
A disadvantage, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Well, that's good to hear that. How do you come up with characters as you base on people that you know, or your own experiences, or purely from your imagination, or is it just a mixture?
It's a good question, in that when you're creating characters, you're creating these entire kinds of beings and lives, and I never feel like I want to use someone that I actually know, because that doesn't actually fit the story. The story is the thing that's important, and so the character has to fit the story. So usually I'll start with something like a grain of someone or myself, and most characters, in fact all the characters in the book, are me to some degree or another. Me as a teacher, me as a kid, me as the friend to someone else, me as the bad guy. It's because you write that character, and so therefore they're a filtering of you in some way or another. But I've also drawn on other things, my friends, my uncles, people that I've met when I was in school, and from my imagination too, things that just work for the story. It always has to work for the story.
Does it help sort of put, ask yourself the question but play another character?
Oh, yeah.
It's building up to this book.
Yeah.
So yeah. Putting it, like getting things off your chest. Sorry, I had to put that one out there. But I just came across that way and I just thought, yeah, I'm going to ask this question.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, you know, you and I think all writers do that to some degree or another. Yeah. You know, you're trying to get something out. This is the thing too, Michael, that is really scary, you know, and I've really realized it with this book too. You write and sometimes you don't really realize what you're writing, but you are exposing yourself. You are letting people know, you know, what's going on inside of you. And sometimes you don't even know what that is. So there's that element of truth in there that I might be going beyond what I would rather, you know, was not there. But there, it's there anyway. And that's the way it goes.
But when you built up your characters, mm-hmm. was it the same approach when you were painting a painting or sculpting a sculpture?
Yeah.
And the descriptions that you were giving, but painting the book with words? I mean, yeah. I've been watching my daughter Anne, listening to my daughter write her stories.
Right.
And now listening to you and how you're building up your characters. I'm really curious, like, did you have the same approach as you were creating the art piece itself?
There's a lot of crossover, and that's the thing is, for me, I visualize the characters, I visualize the situations, the rooms, everything that's happening, I visualize it first. And so it's a matter of me trying to just write down what it is that I'm visualizing. So it is very much like working on a painting in the same way. And I trusted in that. I trusted in the fact that I'm a painter to be able to write, you know. And it's not completely the same, but there's a lot of crossover because there really is that visualization. It's there.
You retired from teaching art, and now you're writing full time. What are you working on at the moment?
I'm working on a book. I'm 110,000 words into it now, so it really should be approaching the end. But in my process, I just write. I just write everything that I need to write. And then when that, you know, process is done, and then I sit down and then I start chopping away what needs to be done to make it work as a book. So getting pretty close to the end of it. And it's a historical fiction that's set in Northland in 1918 at the end of the First World War. And it's around the Spanish flu epidemic that happened just at the time of the armistice. And, you know, people don't realize that worldwide it killed like 50 to 100 million people. They don't even know exactly how many people died. It was just amazing. In this country, there were 8,600 people that were killed by the flu. During World War I, there were 18,000 soldiers that were killed in 4 years. So that's how devastating it was. It was like half the people that actually fought and died in Europe died in 2 months in this country.
So why the fascination with the people dying and like on a mass?
The thing that I find interesting about that is the fact that, and I think it was largely because of World War I, people just forgot about the Spanish flu. It was huge and it was devastating, but people went about their lives after it was over and it just got kind of shoved underneath the carpet. And there were some wonderful things that happened during that pandemic because people helped each other. But those stories haven't been told, and so I'm trying to tell all those stories now.
Now that we have this book here, when's it actually going on sale and where we can purchase it?
Yeah.
And when it's got to come available to the public? Because that's probably the most important part of the actual book.
Right. Well, it's actually on sale right now at Unity.
Awesome. Okay.
And all good bookstores. I know Paper Plus will be carrying it.
One more question before we go. And when it comes available in the bookshop, the first thing I was taken to before reading it was actually the colours of the book, because I find that quite fascinating. It's just got this vanishing point, almost like red to orange horizon, and it's got open your eyes, and I definitely did open my eyes when I saw it. So, you know, why the cover? Was that your cover or was it you?
No, actually it wasn't. We had a designer, Spencer Levine.
Spencer Levine
was the designer, and I'd seen some of his work before online, and so I trusted that he'd do something that was going to be interesting. And even though I have done design work before, I don't consider myself a designer, so I thought, well, let's see what this guy can do. You know, he came up with something I thought that was really compelling, and it has a feeling of a 1960s book too, you know, the kind of book covers they had in those days, which I thought was really interesting, and I like those nice diagonal lines coming in and bringing you right into it.
Because then they'll take you on this journey. This is how I'm looking at it. Like, it's got this long road, this is the journey, there's a vanishing point, but you've got to open your eyes and see where this book's going to take you. So I'm sort of looking forward to hopping on the plane and taking this to France with me and having a good read.
Because
I actually looked for some material to take away with me, so this is perfect. Anyway, thanks for